Pull up a chair. I want you to smell it first. Castor oil, hot and sweet, blowing back off a rotary engine and coating everything. Your goggles, your lips, the collar of your jacket. Cut grass, gasoline, and dust, always dust, kicked up off some Kansas cow pasture where a hand-painted sign nailed to a fence post says one word. Aeroplanes, that's where we're headed today. Back when Avgas was cheap and airspace was free, and the closest thing this country had to an airline was a couple of grinning fools in a war surplus biplane, passing the hat. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger. And this is the hangar, the corner of the dial where we keep the old stories warm. Today I want to tell you about a man they called Upside Down Pangborn, and the traveling show that put a whole generation of Americans in the air for the first time, the Gates Flying Circus. Before we roll the prop on that, let me tip my hat to the folks keeping this show flying. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And I like that because today's whole segment is about earning your story the hard way. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's set the scene. The Great War ends in 1918, and America, it turns out, has built way too many training airplanes. The Curtiss JN-4, the airplane everybody called the Jenny, thousands of them wood and wire and fabric. A 90-horse Curtiss Ox-5 up front that leaked oil the way the rest of us breathe. The government had no use for them anymore, so they sold them off, crated, brand new, never flown for a few hundred dollars. Some fellows bought one for the price of a good used car and had a career. Now, here's where it gets interesting. You had thousands of young men who just learned to fly in the Army, and thousands of cheap airplanes and no jobs flying them. No airlines to speak of. No regulations either, mind you. This is before the Air Commerce Act of 1926. There was no license to get, no medical to fail, nobody from the Department of Commerce walking the ramp. If you could scrape together the money for a Jenny and you didn't kill yourself in the first month, you were, by God, a professional aviator. So they went barnstorming. The word itself comes from the theater, from actors who'd tour the sticks and perform in barns. The pilots borrowed it, and the routine was always the same. You'd find a town buzz Main Street low enough to rattle the windows and stop the horses, and then set down in a farmer's field on the edge of town. By the time you'd shut down, half the county was walking out to see you, children first, then everybody else. And you'd sell rides, usually a dollar, sometimes five, if it was a big town and you were feeling proud. For a lot of these folks, that ride was the single most extraordinary thing that would ever happen to them. Farm people who'd never been faster than a trotting horse, suddenly 1,000 feet over their own barn, looking down at the whole shape of their life laid out like a quilt. Grown men wept. It happened all the time. Ivan Gates understood something the other showmen didn't. Ivan Gates was a promoter, a hustler in the best sense of the word, and around 1922 he put together the outfit that would become the biggest of them all, the Gates Flying Circus. Not one airplane, a fleet, a caravan of Jennies and standards rolling from town to town with mechanics and parachute jumpers and a payroll to meet. And Gates had a radical idea about the price of a ride. Everybody else charged a dollar or more. Gates dropped it, a dollar, then he dropped it again. He'd advertise rides for a dollar, and then for special promotions, he cut it to a nickel, a 5-cent airplane ride. He figured he'd make it up on volume, and brother did he ever. The Gates outfit claimed to have carried something like 1 million passengers over its life. 1 million in the 1920s. More people than the fledgling airlines would carry for years to come. Ivan Gates didn't just entertain America, he talked America into trusting an airplane. But a cut-rate ride only gets the crowd out to the field. To keep them there, to make them gasp, you needed a star. And the Gates Flying Circus had the best in the business. Clyde Pangborn, now. Pangborn was a Washington State boy, born up near the Idaho line, worked the mines and the timber before the Army taught him to fly, and he was a natural, one of those pilots the airplane just seems to like. But what set him apart wasn't the smoothness, it was the nerve, cold, patient, mathematical nerve. They called him Upside Down Pangborn because he'd fly that Jenny inverted longer than anybody thought a wooden fabric trainer had any business staying inverted, oil pouring back, the engine coughing on a carburetor that was never meant to run that way. But that's not the trick that made his name. The trick that made his name was the mid-air change. Picture it, two airplanes, flying formation a few thousand feet over the crowd, and a man climbs out of the cockpit, into the wind, out onto the wing. This is a 100-mile-an-hour gale trying to peel him off into the sky. No parachute worth the name, most days. He works his way out to the wingtip, and the second airplane slides in above him, close, and trails down a rope ladder, and the wingwalker reaches up and grabs it and lets go of one airplane to dangle beneath another.
Think about the flying that takes. Not the acrobat. The pilots. Two men holding formation so tight and so steady that a human being can step between their machines in open air, with nothing but sky underneath. One twitch, one gust, one blip of a rough-running engine, and you've killed your friend in front of 10,000 people who paid a nickel to watch. Pangborn's crew did it over and over, wing walkers strolling out to the tips, a jumper hanging by his teeth from a leather bit, changing airplanes in flight like a man stepping between train cars, and the money shot, the one that emptied every wallet in the county, was the night jump with fireworks or the plane-to-plane transfer at the very edge of dusk when the crowd could just barely stand to watch. Let me tell you about one that went sideways, because the good stories always have a bad night in them. There's a tale from the Gates outfit, and versions of it get told different ways in the old accounts, but the bones are these. A wing walker gets himself out onto the wing for the ladder transfer, and the pickup goes wrong. The ladder's out of reach, or the airplane can't climb with the drag, and now there's a man stranded out on the wing of an airplane that is running low on the one thing that matters, which is fuel. And Pangborn flying it has a choice to make that no check ride ever prepared a man for. He can't land normal with a body hanging off the lift strut. He nurses it. He flies it gentle as a mother, bleeds it down, and puts it on the grass in a way that keeps his man alive. That was the real skill under all the show business, not the daredevil stuff, the judgment. Knowing exactly how much that old Jenny had left to give, and never asking for 1 ounce more. That's the part I want you student pilots to hear. Because it's easy to look at the barnstormers as a pack of reckless cowboys, and some of them surely were, and a great many of them are buried because of it. The washout rate was brutal. These men died in numbers that would shut down aviation tomorrow if it happened now. Structural failures, stalls turning to spins, turning to a smoking hole, engines that quit over terrain with no place to go, but the ones who lasted, the Pangborns, they lasted because they were students of the machine. They knew the Jenny down to the last turnbuckle. They knew what the wires sounded like when the airspeed was right, and what they sounded like when it wasn't. They flew by the seat of the pants because the seat of the pants was the only instrument they had, and they trained it the way you'd train a hunting dog. There's a lesson in that 100 years old and still good. The airplane is always talking to you. The great ones never stop listening. Now here's where it gets interesting, and a little sad. The very thing the barnstormers were selling, the idea that flying was safe enough for your grandmother to try for a nickel, that idea grew up and put them out of business. Because in 1926, Washington finally stepped in. The Air Commerce Act. Suddenly you needed a license to fly for hire. Suddenly the airplane needed a certificate. Suddenly you couldn't just buzz Main Street at 50 feet and set down in a cow pasture, because now there were rules about how low and where and how close to people. And a beat-up war surplus Jenny with 10,000 hard hours on her airframe could not pass an inspection to save her life. And you know what? Those rules were right. They saved lives. Every reg in that book you carry today has somebody's name written on it in a way you can't see. A lot of those names came off the fields where the flying circuses played. The barnstormers, God love them, wrote the safety rules in the worst way possible, one funeral at a time. The Gates Flying Circus flew its last shows around 1929, right as the stock market went over the falls. The great traveling circuses folded their tents, and the men scattered, some to the young airlines, some to the airmail, some to Hollywood, flying for the cameras, some to instructing, passing what they knew to the next bunch. Clyde Pangborn, our upside-down man, he wasn't done. Not by a long shot. 2 years after the circus wound down in 1931, Pangborn and a partner named Hugh Herndon took a Balanca they called Miss Vidal and made the first nonstop flight across the Pacific Ocean, Japan to Washington State. Over 4,000 miles of empty gray water in a single-engine airplane, and to squeeze out the range, Pangborn rigged the landing gear to drop away after takeoff to shed the drag, which meant he'd flown across an entire ocean knowing he'd have to belly it in on the far side, which he did, slid it in on the fuselage in a field not far from where he grew up. Same cold, patient mathematical nerve that carried a wing walker safely down over a county fair, just a bigger stage. That's the thing about the barnstorming era. We remember it for the stunts, the wing walking, and the loops and the nickel rides, but what it really was a finishing school. A brutal, unforgiving, wide-open finishing school that took a generation of young men and women and forged the pilots who would fly the mail through the mountains at night and open the airlines and train the air crews of the war that was coming. The circus wasn't a sideshow to the history of flying in this country. For about 10 years there, the circus was the main tent. Every one of us who's ever taxied out to a grass strip on a still morning is flying in their prop wash. every kid who presses a nose to the fence at an air show and decides right then that this is the thing, is having the exact same moment those farm folks had climbing down out of a Jenny with their hair blown sideways and their whole idea of the world made bigger. They sold America its first airplane ride for a nickel. And America has never really climbed back down. If you want to read more, go looking for the old accounts of Ivan Gates and his flying circus and dig into Clyde Pangborn's own story and the Miss Vedel flight across the Pacific. The Smithsonian and a good handful of aviation historians have kept those records alive, and they're worth an evening of your time. You can always find us at RadioHangar.com. Next time you're out at the field and you see an old open cockpit biplane come around the pattern, castor oil and all, tip your hat. You're looking at where all of this started. I'm Taildragger. Keep the greasy side down.